You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Liz Truss has resigned as UK Prime Minister after just 6 weeks following her failed economic policy. The Conservative Party, which holds a big majority in Parliament, will now elect a new leader by October 28. First, I spoke to Executive Director of the New Zealand Initiative, Oliver Hartwich, about Truss's 45 tumultuous days as Prime Minister.
Well, Liz Truss had a brief but tumultuous time as British Prime Minister. It only lasted about 45 days, but it was one of the most extraordinary episodes in recent British politics. And that says something because there have been many political troubles, of course, for Britain since the Brexit vote. She became Prime Minister, rather, just a few days before the monarch passed away, and that dominated her first couple of weeks in the job. And after that, her Chancellor of the Exchequer, so basically her Finance Minister, presented a so-called mini-budget. And that was basically a collection of tax cuts, but they were unfunded, and they were increasing Britain's fiscal hole to about 8% of GDP. And that's when markets rebelled, when the International Monetary Fund told Britain that they can't do that. That's when pound sterling collapsed in markets. That's when the Bank of England had to intervene, and Britain was facing an almighty financial and economic catastrophe. So she had to basically revise all of these policies. She fired her chancellor for basically implementing her own policies, and then just a few days later also lost her Home Secretary over a disagreement on immigration policy. And then she tried to bully her own party into a vote in the House of Commons, and that was really when things got too much, even for her most ardent supporters, and she had to resign. So it was an extraordinary time for the Conservative Party, and now the party is really looking at the shambles of their now 12 years in government. And if an election were held tomorrow, they could be reduced to, I've seen one opinion poll saying it could just be a single Conservative MP with a Labour majority of more than 500 MPs.
Truss resisted resigning up until even yesterday after her failed economic policy. So what might have gone on behind the scenes between so soon ago when she was defending herself and now to ultimately drive her out?
Well, I think it became apparent that there was absolutely no support for her left, especially after that disastrous vote in the House of Commons. So initially she wanted to make this a vote of confidence in her own policies and in her person. And that's when Tory MPs rebelled. They didn't want to support it that way. Then they were bullied by the Chief Whip. The Chief Whip then was seen actually walking out of the scene in the Commons saying, oh, I'll quit and I'm not having to do anything with that anymore, and then unresigned just a couple of hours later. So the scenes in the House of Commons were absolutely shambolic, and I saw one interview with a senior Tory backbench MP saying that in his 17 years in the House of Commons, he'd never seen anything like it, and he was ashamed to be part of that parliamentary faction. So back last night, I think it was absolutely clear that they couldn't go on that way. I saw one quote from an unnamed Tory backbench MP who was also a medical doctor saying if that happened to a patient of his, he would probably advise the relatives it's a matter of hours, not days. And when I read that comment, I thought, okay, the writing's on the wall and she will be forced to resign. And that's what she did then just a few hours later. The really interesting question is how the party will go on, because obviously they couldn't have a dragged-out election for the next leader as they had over the British summer this year. So they're trying to compress this now into just a week. So by Monday, the candidates for the leadership have to present 100 signatures of their parliamentary colleagues. There will be a vote in the parliamentary faction. The final two candidates would be put to a ballot of the membership unless the runner-up withdraws from the contest, in which case we would see some kind of coronation with a new prime minister installed by Friday next week.
What is the UK's history of short prime minister terms in the UK? Is Truss the shortest ever, and does anyone even come close?
Yes, I had to look that up, actually. I wasn't quite sure how bad it is, but no, she is definitely the shortest-serving prime minister by quite a mile. You have to go back into the early 19th century to find a prime minister who was at a job for, I think it was just about 3 months at the time. But typically they last a little bit longer. I mean, the longest serving British prime minister was Walpole, also 19th century, for 20 years. The most recent prime minister, of course, only served just a few years. I mean, Theresa May, Boris Johnson didn't last long. David Cameron had 6 years. Before him, Gordon Brown, I think it, from memory, about four or so, or maybe three or four. And then Tony Blair, of course, from 1997 to, I think it was 2006 when he passed on to Gordon Brown. So it's a recent phenomenon that these prime ministerships are getting shorter again, but in absolute terms, she's not the shortest by quite, she is the shortest, because you have to really go back into the early 19th century to find something comparable.
Now that Truss has resigned, could you speak to who we might see run for the position? Could Boris potentially be back?
Well, under normal circumstances, you would say, of course not, because he still has an investigation hanging over his head from the party affair that led to his resignation. He might even lose his parliamentary seat and be forced into a by-election, which he probably wouldn't win. So under normal circumstances, you would say Boris Johnson has no chance of regaining his old job. But then again, these are not normal circumstances in Britain, and everything is possible. So he is in the run. He might have the support of enough of his parliamentary colleagues to be one of the candidates on Monday. The other candidate, of course, is Rishi Sunak, the former chancellor. So he kept himself really quiet. He was a contestant, of course, in the contest to replace Boris Johnson over the summer, and he didn't get it back then. And we haven't actually heard much from Rishi Sunak since. He had warned publicly, of course, before or during the leadership contest that Liz Truss's economic policies would fail, and he was proven right. So he would probably secure the nomination of at least 100 of his colleagues again. And then there are a few odd ones out. There might be Penny Mordaunt, who some commentators think might have another crack at it. Then there is Jeremy Hunt, who was just named Chancellor of the Exchequer, and maybe even Grant Chaps. But I think then it becomes really speculative. I think none of them is likely to get 100 signatures. But then again, the British political scene is so unpredictable these days. Almost anything is possible, regardless of who they pick now as leader. The next election is almost certainly going Labour's way, and Britain will get a change of government after, 14 years of Conservative government.
Next, I spoke to Associate Professor of Media and Communication at the University of Auckland, Dr. Neil Curtis, about how UK politics has got to its current state and what it could mean for Aotearoa this upcoming general election.
That is a very, very difficult question to answer. But I think generally we have a Conservative Party in the UK that has been dominated, completely dominated for a long time now by entirely ideological and extremely dogmatic thinkers, supported by sort of hard right neoliberal think tanks. And on top of that, you've had MPs who are kind of prepared to do anything to get ministerial appointments. So I think it's that kind of pretty toxic mix of dogma and egotism without any attention to facts, reality, interests of a country, concern for society. I think in general terms, that is the way I would understand it. And I think we've seen that transition of the Conservative Party. I mean, it's been a very, very long transition, right? Starting with Thatcher, sort of her antisocial revolution begun in 1979. But she still had an international and sort of global perspective, although she did play the nationalist card. She sort of eulogized Victorian Britain. She was a defender of empire. She used the Union Jack whenever she could. But she was also a pragmatic politician who understood the importance of international relations and in particular the EU. But that dogma of neoliberalism, the anti-social dogma, was started by her. And then you had the sort of nationalistic turn, which I believe was a response to the failures of neoliberalism. We had increased inequality, an unstable economy that manifested in the financial crisis, greater sort of gaps in wealth, increase in poverty, undermining of public services, introductions of austerity. And I think to sort of to maintain the neoliberal program and dogma in relation to that, they then needed to find an enemy. They needed to distract people with an enemy. So, it, you know, since Thatcher, really, the enemy had always been the sort of the work-shy, the lazy welfare people and so on. Then it became sort of foreigners, immigrants in particular, and refugees. Then it became the EU. And I think the sort of the turn to nationalism was in part to sort of put a kind of a band-aid over all the problems and still enable them to pursue these kind of this kind of free market dogma and the complete myth of trickle-down economics. And then you have the additional thing with Brexit being a way to get rid of labour protections in the UK in order to further entrench neoliberal dogma. So, I mean, it's a very complex and long historical process, but once you end up with the pure dogmatists and the pure egotists running a major party who happen to be in government for 12 years, that is a complete recipe for disaster. So that would be a very short version of the sort of the long process that's happened.
How did Truss's approach and her sort of messaging compare to that of Boris, although she was only in the role for such a short amount of time?
I think Johnson is a sort of an arch neoliberal in many respects, like Truss, and a nationalist like Truss. But I think Johnson was happy to play a broader populist card by attempting to deploy some sense of social engagement and to some degree of welfare. But I think that was Rishi Sunak as the Chancellor, right, who was prepared to spend money to try to sort of prop up things, support things. I mean, Johnson doesn't care what happens as long as he's in power, right? He's not bothered. So Sunak took a slightly different approach, which came out in Johnson's premiership. But of course, that approach was rejected by the sort of dogmatists in the Conservative Party, who went for Truss, who was promising these ridiculous tax cuts, even though everybody knows that trickle-down economics is as mythical as a unicorn and as crazy as any conspiracy theory you might wish to imagine, right? So they voted for her. So I think the difference was that Johnson would go for anything as long as it kept him in power. And he had a chancellor that had some actual basis in economics. So he understood that there still was some important role for the state in terms of shoring up against the sort of chaos of sort of casino capitalism that we sort of live in now. And as I say, Boris Johnson wouldn't be bothered about any of that as long as it kept him in power. Why Johnson was thrown out was because he's so corrupt and so fundamentally immoral. And that was kind of bad for polling. So they got rid of him. But of course, now there's talk of trying to bring him back. We've entered a kind of age of sort of zombie conservatism, I think.
I want to ask you about what this could mean for Aotearoa. Chris Luxon, National Party leader, has said that his party strongly aligns with Liz Truss's government. So what could this possibly mean for the next general election?
He also said that he aligns himself and his party with the Brexit project.
Right.
And as I said before, Brexit was primarily, the nationalism and the sort of freedom stuff was really, it's all smoke and mirrors. The main reason for Brexit was to be able to get rid of the work time directive, right, where people are only legally supposed to work a certain amount of hours. And it would afford them the ability to tear up as much labour regulation as possible. And of course, this is where Luxon comes from. This is who Luxon is, right? He's a businessman who's hell-bent on just getting as much market share as he can, which means getting as much wealth for the class that he represents, and ensuring that that market share comes at the expense of workers. So, yes, he is profoundly ideologically aligned with that wing. I mean, if you remember, he went over and spoke to one of these hard right think tanks in the UK. That was that sort of infamous speech he gave, where he sort of slagged off every single aspect of New Zealand society and economics, right? Because it wasn't sufficiently hard right and neoliberal for him. You know, so yes, that's where the National Party would currently take us if they were to get in. So it is troubling. And I don't think, I'm not sure people are paying enough attention to that. And this is a very serious time we're living in politically and economically. And there are a group of very, very powerful people who are doing everything they possibly can to further increase their power and further increase their wealth, and in the process completely undermine democracy. And unless we pay attention to it, we're in deep trouble.
That was Dr. Oliver Hartwich and Dr. Neil Curtis on Liz Truss's resignation.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.